Welcome back to the Dissy Breakdown. I'm Maya.
And I'm Caro, and we're two American friends on opposite coasts who love to break down
and break down over
Turkish TV shows. Hey, Maya.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm good. It's nice to be back on the mic again with you.
It's very nice to be back on the mic with you.
I know that both of us haven't really been in Dizzyland lately for various reasons.
Indeed.
Life and, you know, the fact that nothing's really been grabbing our interest much lately.
It's actually really sad. I miss the days when there were shows that I couldn't wait to watch. And I think a part of that for me is that it was a product of the pandemic and not going out as much and just having a lot of time to binge watch older shows. And then not having that time, it's tough for me anyways to grasp on to a new show. They get canceled quickly, some of them I've lost interest in.
I think that's actually a good point, because there was a time where whenever I had a free moment, I would go into the backlog of whatever the iconic Dizzies are that I haven't seen yet and start one and get invested, and I haven't really done that.
I think it also set a really high bar, though, because I know when I started watching Dizzies, I could pick any one I wanted to start watching, and obviously I had picked some of the most popular shows to watch. You know, there was Kuzgun, Kiralik Aşk, Kara Para Aşk, there was Kara Sevda, Erkenzi Kuş. Like, these are arguably some of the most popular to this day Dizzies. And it's difficult to get into the current ones because you don't have those reviews. You don't have that level of support behind them being like, ooh, yeah, so many people love the show. I want to love this show.
Yeah. And I think because the last couple of years, especially during the pandemic, Senchal Kapımı, etc.
Yes.
They got globally recognized. And so I wonder if the Dizzy machine in Turkey has been churning out more just to be like, what's going to be the next hit? And there are these mediocre ones that they then cancel after 5 to 12 episodes.
Mediocre is a really great way to put it.
And it's sad because I really enjoyed that time of my life and I still really love Turkish TV.
I do too. And I still think for me, there's the hope of another show that grabs my attention the way that, you know, Senchal Kapımı and Kiralik Aşk have in the past. But even some of the other ones that were more recent. Remember we watched Alev Alev together?
I was thinking about that recently because that's such a great show that no one talks about.
No one talks about it, but it was so good. And I think it's one of the rare shows that didn't have a strong romantic storyline, and I still loved it.
Yeah, I mean, there were definitely romantic subplots, but that's not what the show was about, and it was still pretty epic for a majority of the time.
Correct, yes. So, we're still in Dizzyland, obviously, we're doing this episode. Maya, have you been watching any Dizzies lately?
I mean, lately is a bit of a stretch, but since we recorded last, I did watch in its entirety Bambaşka Biri.
You did finish it.
Yes, I did finish it. I think I was pretty caught up. I think I watched it mostly as it aired. But yeah, it was nice to see Hande again and have a new action-y drama show that I could get invested in. And I was interested as the story progressed and I wanted to know what happens, and the writing was pretty well done. And yet it wasn't putting me in an emotional pit of despair.
Always a plus in Disneyland.
And it was, you know, her and her long anticipated reunion with Burak Deniz. And I never watched their original rom-com, and I don't think I ever will, but it was cool to witness a reunion show that stayed on air for an okay amount of time.
It reached only what, like between 12 and 15 episodes?
Yeah, it had 16 episodes, which isn't a long run, but it was enough to tell the story that they wanted to tell. And there was a lot of twists and turns. And I think that they got the notice that they weren't coming back kind of abruptly. And that does come off a little bit in the ending, but not much. It was pretty impressively ended for where the story was. And then they're like, and then it's over, the end.
That's great. And it's so rare too, because just about every Dizzy pretty much gets canceled because of ratings at some point, right? So very rarely, I think, do Dizzies get a very well thought out ending. It's usually just like, oh, the ratings are getting worse. Let's wrap this up.
Yeah, and I think it's a testament to some Dizzy writers when they can think on their feet and say, oh, wait, what are all the threads we have open?
Yep.
And how can we tie them up in little bows as best we can with the 2 hours or 4 hours or however much time they know in advance?
Yeah, absolutely. That's great, though. I'm very glad you finished it, because I know you had wanted to see it and tried to get me to watch it for a little bit before you gave up and just went on your merry way with it.
Yeah. It was okay, though. I mean, now that I've seen it, I'm not going to force you to watch it. But, you know, I was just kind of like, what can Caro and I watch together right now?
I mean, hopefully a summer Dizzy. I'm hoping there's a good one this summer.
Yeah, last summer was not it for me.
I know. In reminiscing of our previous episodes, we had high hopes last summer for the Karem show. And that fell real flat for me.
Did you finish it? Because I did not.
No, I didn't.
I think you got farther than I did, because I was like, yeah, I'm going to see it through. And then I was
probably.
Like, actually, no. Why am I doing this?
Yeah, I don't think I finished any of the summer rom-coms last year. It was a dud season for me. There was nothing. There's usually something that I can gravitate towards. I guess we've just been spoiled by years past, because I think it was 2 years ago. There was Bat Ayono. You know, there was just a bunch that I really liked.
You know what I was thinking of a couple days ago?
What?
Was Ada Masala.
Yes! Turkish Mamma Mia.
Turkish Mamma Mia. There were definitely flaws in that show. We talked about it in our episode that we did.
Of course.
But just the nostalgia that the first few episodes of that show bring me lead me to reminisce about that show. I think I have a way more positive nostalgia towards it than the show might deserve.
Agreed. I think overall, if I have to be unnecessarily harsh, I'd say the show was boring at worst, but it was beautiful. The cast was gorgeous. There was great chemistry between the two leads. It had the potential of a good plot. Sign me up. That's what I want in a rom-com summer Dizzy. And it delivered.
It did. But anyway, I've just been thinking about the quote-unquote good old days.
2 years ago.
I also started watching Isla.
I remember you telling me you had watched the first episode.
Yeah, I think I've watched 4 episodes now, and I really do like it, and it's over now, which gives me hope. It can be a train I'll jump on and not risk it never ending. I really did enjoy what I saw. I just haven't gone back to it quite yet. Also, as I seem to mention every time it comes around, the Seattle Turkish Film Festival happened since our last episode.
Oh, did you go?
I did, and I saw 2 movies. The first one I saw was called Aniden, or Suddenly.
Okay.
Which I'd been wanting to watch ever since I heard about it, like a year ago. And it has the actress Defne Kaylar, who, I don't know if you've seen her in anything, Caro, but she was in the Netflix show Bir Başkadir, or Ethos, which was one of the earlier Turkish Netflix shows.
I never saw that.
Which is one that I really loved. It's very indie and experimental feeling. It's very much like cinema versus rom-com or drama or anything. But the actress is also Ali Bilgin, the Yarga director's wife in real life.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And so she headlines this film, Aniden. And so I'd been wanting to see it, but, you know, I couldn't find it online or with subtitles or anything. So it was really cool that that one came to town.
Yeah, that's nice.
The movie that Pinar did a few years ago that just came out last year, Karanlık Gece, they were playing it, but it was part of this whole gala and the tickets were really expensive. And I was like, I just want to watch this movie with English subtitles, not go to this $100 dinner party. So I ended up not seeing that. But I did see the film Kuru Otlar Üstüne, or About Dry Grasses, which went to Cannes this year, Cannes Film Festival, and the lead actress, Merve Dizdar, ended up winning Best Actress in all of Cannes, and that was really big deal in Turkey because she's the first one. So that was cool. I mean, it's a 3-hour long film, but I'm glad I saw it. And it had our buddy Deniz Celioğlu, who, Caro, you will know from Siyah Beyaz Aşk as Ferhat's brother Yiğit.
Oh my goodness, yes, Yiğit.
Because I remember we've talked about it, like, where did that guy go? Does he act in anything else?
He's just Ferhat's brother to me.
Honestly. So it was nice to see him in a lead role in a kind of unlikable character, to be honest.
Really?
Yeah. So that was a fun little jaunt. The other thing that I've been watching kind of recently is I've been rewatching Üç Kuruş.
Really?
I don't know how to explain it, but I think it's one of my favorite Dizzies. Like top 3.
With Noodley Head.
Yes.
It's the noodly head.
It is.
That's the draw. That was one of the ones I never finished.
Yeah, I think you only watched the first couple episodes.
I did.
Something about that show, it just checks all the boxes for what I want in a drama. And I think I didn't realize it till after it ended. And I was like, oh, wait, that was freaking great. So I've been rewatching that and it's been nice.
That's nice, though. There's no shame in that. I mean, I've obviously rewatched Kirlik Ashk. I don't think I actually finished my second rewatch of it, but every once in a great while, I remember that I didn't finish it. And I'm like, I should put that on. I really want to watch season two of that again, because I think I'm in the minority where I loved season two of Kirlik Ashk. But problem is that I can't keep it as background noise because it's subtitles and I want to watch it.
Yeah.
And then I don't do what I'm supposed to be doing. So that's my internal dilemma. But I love a good rewatch of a show that, you know, like you said, just ticks all your boxes. It's kind of like a comfort show. It hits a need in that moment. There's nothing wrong with that. That's great.
So that's pretty much it. I will say, and I'm a little embarrassed to admit this.
Mm-hmm. No, tell the masses, Maya.
It's been 20 plus episodes, and I still have not started Yarga season 3.
Dun, dun, dun.
And I will. I'm getting closer to the point where I'm going to start it.
In your defense, though, it never should have been a show that went past season one.
It never should have been this long. Season two was okay.
Season two was draining in terms of how dramatic it was.
Honestly, Yarga should have been a 45-episode show. Season one was super strong, and then it kind of ended, and then we were on this new journey. And there are so many great things about season two.
Agreed.
But it feeds into this thing where something gets popular and it becomes corporatized. The ratings are in, the international deals are rolling in. Got remade in Greece. It's getting aired all over South America and the Middle East. And
that's right.
It's so good. I love it so much. Don't get me wrong. It's still my favorite show, number one on my Dizzy list. But I just think the emotional turmoil of watching the show, feeling like I want to cover my eyes, like, please don't ruin it. Please don't ruin it. Please don't ruin it, just to keep it going.
I get that.
And I think I was traveling back when the third season started, and I kind of heard rumblings, because, you know, it's the internet, you can't avoid, like, how the season was starting. And so I know general plot beats of how it's gone so far. I know some dramatic things that have happened so far in this season, and I will watch it because I want to support my faves. I love the cast, love the crew, but I've just needed time. And then now I need actual time to sit down and watch 20 plus
only
episodes.
Only about a solid month. That's all.
Yeah, no.
20 episodes.
Yeah,
no,
just carve that out. It's fine.
Just, you know, cancel all your plans for the foreseeable future.
So I don't want to be seen as a fake fan because I truly and deeply love the show. But I just haven't been in the headspace to let myself.
And the Dizzy Breakdown podcast is nothing if not authentic.
No.
So
this is my breakdown. We're working through it.
Tell me, have you heard anything about them doing a season 4?
I've heard there have been some tweet campaigns and I'm...
Oh boy.
That's part of the reason why I just can't be on Twitter. One, because I don't want to see too many spoilers and I don't really have anything
that's how I
to
am
say.
Too.
But I get it. I understand the mentality of this is a show I love. These are actors I love seeing. I want it to never end. But I'm not one of those people, and I never have been, because as I've said many times on this podcast, I want a show to end when the story is at an ending point.
Correct, yeah.
Versus drawing it out and finding more things for them to do just so we can see more of them. I know that's not necessarily a common consensus, but I would rather have it end well and me think back on it fondly than just have it get run into the ground for as long as people will watch it.
Because Sem is a good writer, so she's not going to give us a boring show. The problem is with that comes trauma for our characters. And I'm just at the point where, like, season two was emotionally draining. Like, it was heavy. It was not a light show to watch. It was often frustrating at times with the amount of negative things that happened to our beloved characters. And now season three, again, Sema's doing her job and she's putting out a really interesting product. But with that comes more trauma for the characters.
Right. And it's like, realistically,
Right. Realistically, they'd all be in a mental hospital at this point.
The amount of times Jalen and Ilgaz have divorced.
Oh, yeah. They have a revolving door at the courthouse.
It's so irritating because... okay. I won't make this a Yarga podcast, I promise. Caro, I know we haven't watched a lot, but what have you been watching since we last recorded?
So, unlike Maya, I have watched a few episodes of Yarga Season 3. I've watched, I want to say I'm maybe around episode 5 for the season. I won't say what part I'm at because Maya hasn't watched it, but it's traumatic. There's a lot going on. It's interesting, but it's because it's so heavy and draining. It honestly keeps me from being able to binge it like I would want to. So there is Yarga. I recently watched a lovely movie on Netflix that I just happened to put on one night. I forget why. I think I was just in the mood for something kind of light. It seemed like a rom-com type movie. And it was called Last Call for Istanbul. And it's with Kıvanç Tatlıtuğ. I think that's how you say his last name. I liked it. It was a really interesting movie about two people who fly from Istanbul to New York. And she loses her luggage and they traverse the city looking for it. And in doing that, they grow closer and they have this wild night of crazy New York experiences. There's a really big twist at the end that I should have seen coming and I didn't. And I'm mad at myself because Maya would absolutely have guessed it probably within the first 5 minutes. But if you're looking for like a light, not fluffy, but light, interesting, romantic drama, I guess I wouldn't say it's a rom-com. It's more of a romantic drama. And like, honestly, Kıvanç looks so good in it, too. I've never really watched anything that he's been in, despite him being one of the premier Turkish actors. He was great. I really liked it.
Oh, right. Because what I know him from is Çarpışma. But yes. I know that everyone else knows him from Aşkı Memnu from back in the day, 2008, around there.
Isn't he also in, like, Kurt Vissera?
Yes, that kind of Russian
yes
one. But Aşkı Memnu, I don't know if you caught this, but the two leads in Last Call for Istanbul are leads from Aşkı Memnu. So this is their much anticipated reunion film after.
I love that actors in Turkey do that. You know,
so I mean,
it makes me really happy that they come back together for a movie. It's sweet.
I know, and I like that it's expected. I feel like in, I don't want to generalize and say Western media as a whole, but American media, I mean, all I can think of is Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone. I can't really think of
Meg Ryan and Tom Hanks.
Them as well. I think Turkey just, you're allowed to expect it.
I think they give into fanfare a little bit more. Like, if they're still fans of it, they're happy to be like, okay, let's do another movie together.
Yes.
Whereas for me, in Western media, it feels more like they don't want to give into the pressure of fanfare. And that's fine. It's what I'm used to, obviously, growing up in America. But it's nice. It's refreshing. It's,
yeah.
I don't think it's always a bad thing to give the people what they want if there's a need for it and it's harmless.
Exactly. And if you can come up with a good story, yeah, it shouldn't be not taboo, but we should be allowed to see repeats of pairings that work and not see it as degrading of the art. It's like, it's good casting. It's good chemistry. Let's lean into
it. The chemistry's there. Why shake things up? No, absolutely. So that's good. It's also on Netflix, so it's super accessible and easy to watch, which is always really nice. Now, this is going to surprise you, but I actually started a new Dizzy just last night.
Did you? Tell me more.
I did. I started Bahar with Demet Evgar. And honestly, I love it. It also has our beloved Mehmet.
Oh, Mehmet. From Yarga. Mehmet Yılmazerk is in it. I've been seeing on Instagram the two of them promoting it. I'm gonna be honest, I can't tell really what the show is about.
Well, I can tell you.
All right, let's do this.
So Mehmet, our beloved Memo, actually plays a jerk in this. So the concept of the show is that Bahar was a doctor, is a licensed doctor, but gave up her career to be a housewife to her acclaimed surgeon husband. And you find out in the first like 5 minutes that their seemingly perfect life, they have two kids, a lovely house, you know, she seems to be relatively happy with her career choices, that the character that Mehmet plays is cheating on her with his, like, long-term girlfriend.
Oh, fun.
And she doesn't know about it. She quickly gets diagnosed with kidney failure.
Okay,
or
cool.
Liver failure. One of those two. I forget which one it is. It might be kidney failure. Because she, like, shows him spots on her hands, and she's like, do these look concerning to you? And he's like, you need to exercise more. That's what you're doing wrong in life.
Oh, good. An accurate portrayal of women being diagnosed with not helpful things.
Pretty much. And then you've got the famous actor, Brugra Gulsoy, I think is his name.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Who plays her doctor. So I'm hoping there's going to be a little romantic tie in there. But basically, the doctor, his name is Everin in the show, is basically like, she needs a liver transplant ASAP. Like, she is critical. She's in liver failure. Something needs to happen. And Mehmet, whose character name is Timur, is basically like, no, I'm not doing this. I'm still young. What if something happens to me? The kids don't have any parent. Everyone kind of fails Bahar. And no one's willing to step up that is able to be a donor. So that's kind of the premise of the first episode. And I like it because I think it's going to be very much like girl power. Bahar is going to, she's obviously the main character. So I'm pretty sure she's going to get that liver transplant. And it's going to be interesting how she kind of fixes her life.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. I'm intrigued.
It's number one right now in the ratings, which is why I started watching it, because I'm always curious when a surprise show gets very popular. And on the Twitter and on some of the Facebook groups I'm in, people are raving about it and they're loving it. So I'm like, all right, I want to see what the hype is about. I'm pleasantly surprised. The episode went by really fast for me. I'm excited to watch episode two.
Interesting. Okay, that's good to hear. Because I did see the ratings going up. And yeah, it rocketed up really high really quickly. Because I think there's only about 5 episodes out so far.
Yeah, so it's also something I can actually catch up on, and that's attainable. But it's nice to see Yelachevkina drop in the ratings. I actually never went back to watch season 2 because I just can't get behind that show anymore. Like, I just don't agree with the storylines. From what I've heard and where it's going, I don't like it. It's very frustrating. And I remember last year when we discussed Yelachevkina briefly, they were the top of the game. They were the number one show. And I just didn't understand how it could be that popular. And so I think people are starting to fall in line and be like, wait, this is a lot of domestic abuse and this is not exactly what I want to watch week after week. So, I mean, it's still popular, but not quite as much as it was. Bahar has taken the number one spot.
Get some new blood in there.
So Maya, do you want to tell everyone what we're going to discuss today?
Of course. So with all that being said, you know, we haven't been as engaged with Dizzy's lately, but there is one show that finished up relatively recently that was important to us. We actually already did an episode on it. So we've come back to finally do a part 2 for Adam Farah and talk all about season 2.
And this is going to be a little interesting because I finished season 2 not too far after it actually aired. I'd say I probably finished it within a week or two. And Maya more recently finished season 2. So,
and by more recently, she means today.
I was trying to be nice, Maya.
Well, I can't remember what was happening. I was a few episodes behind when it ended, and I was really busy, and it got to the point where I knew there was going to be a gap. And so I said, I'm not going to watch the last couple of episodes until we're going to record about it so that I don't forget what's happening.
And lo and behold,
we finally set the date kind of recently.
We did.
But I did procrastinate a tiny bit, and so I was watching it today. So it's very fresh.
But you did finish it, and that's what counts.
I did. So we're going to talk about it again. We're not going to do as much of an overview of the show or the cast because we've already done that in our season 1 episode. So if you would like to hear what we thought about the premise and season 1, please go check out episode 8, which is where we talk about all things Adam Farah season 1. But we'll have a few notes that are more pertinent to season 2.
Of course. So season 1 premiered on March 1st, 2023 on Fox, which is now called Now. And season 2 premiered on September 27th, 2023, kicking off the regular Dizzy season, along with, you know, most of the other shows. A weekday change did take place for the date that the show aired. Historically, Adam Farah aired on Wednesdays, and then it moved to Saturdays after season 2, episode 4, which is a little bit of a kiss of death when shows move dates. It's not always great. Autumn Farah always kind of suffered, even in season one, from poor ratings, which is a shame because, as we talked about extensively in season one, and even in season two, I still think that the storylines and the characters and the plot could have sustained higher ratings. So not really sure what was going on there with the Turkish audiences and what they didn't like too much about Autumn Farah, because overall, I liked it a lot.
Yeah, it was a really solid show with a solid cast.
Yeah.
A really tight-knit plot. It's so crazy to think that season one happened in March of 2023. That feels so recent in terms of having a multi-season show.
It's a shame that it suffered some mediocre ratings because it definitely deserved better engagement. But because of the ratings, the show did end on December 30th, having only 13 episodes in season two, which is slightly down from season one, which had 14 episodes.
But all in all, a 27-episode run isn't bad. I feel like some of the best Dizzies are under 35 episodes. That feels like the sweet spot as far as a really engaging plot. I feel like after that, new plots definitely take over.
I agree. I just feel that they rushed the ending a little bit. But overall, the show did very well in terms of wrapping things up. They did better than a lot of other Dizzies do, probably because they had a lot of notice.
Yeah. I know that in our other episode, we talked about kind of the premise of Autumn Farah, but Caro, do you want to catch us up on some of the stuff that happened in season two?
Absolutely. So the season primarily builds around the arrival of Farah's ex and Karemshah's biological father, Benham. Season two also very quickly jumps an entire year in the future, where Tahir has been in prison and Benham has been trying to mend things with Farah and build a relationship with his son. Season 2 mostly focuses on Tahir's attempts to save Farah from Benham and reconnect with Karemshah, who is more recently bonding with his father. So while Mehmet is trying to figure out who shot him in the head at the end of Season 1 and trying to figure out if there's a mole within the police department, Benham is trying his hardest to control every single character, essentially, including his very strict traditional mother.
Yeah. After a whole season of Farah being kind of a fish out of water in Turkey, being alone, her past has come to catch up with her, and the Iranians have arrived and set up camp in this mansion in Turkey.
I will say, though, she looks fantastic in season two.
I mean, yeah, the strict family really ups her style game.
Quite the glow up. Oh, yeah. The budget for the wardrobe was increased exponentially just for Farah.
But I feel like right away, I mean, we've already touched on this a little bit, but let's talk about what season two does really well. And as you already touched on, the story moves along pretty quickly right at the beginning. As you said, there's a time jump where we jump ahead a year. So Mehmet's been shot in the head. He's still in a coma. He's still healing. I was re-listening to our old episode and we made some comments and I was like, maybe he'll have an eye patch. Like, he's not dead. But, you know, they found a way for his traumatic headshot brain injury to just be a coma and no visible wounds.
That's a true Dizzy miracle because he was shot point blank in the head.
Honestly, my delusional dreams for this show of him living, this is great. You know, I think they did a good job of not being like, he's fine. But they also didn't go to the extreme of, you know, amnesia or something crazy, which could have honestly worked with a headshot. But I was kind of happy. But yeah, so we've jumped to that.
I wonder if that was planned because they could have done it a little differently where it wasn't a point blank face shot. I wonder if, like, because remember after season one ended, news came out that the Orhan character wasn't going to come back. And Ali Gallup wasn't going to come back. I wonder if the writers were like, huh, well, we were going to kill him off, but
well,
now we can't because they're leaving. I just think they could have done it differently where he wasn't shot right in the head so closely. Like, you could have backed up a little bit, had it a little more ambiguous.
Honestly, I'm going to disagree with you because I think the show, because it had such shaky ratings from the get-go, my guess is that the writers and the crew didn't know how much time they had for their story at any given moment.
That's fair.
So I think giving us this dramatic cliffhanger, one, kept viewers wanting to watch the next season, but also having him shot in the head point blank, this character with unrealized potential, are they dead? That gives them so much room to grow. It gives them the summer to think about what story they want to build. And it gives them a lot of places to go because we're already going to have to suspend some disbelief because he doesn't have, like, lasting brain trauma.
Some disbelief.
Well, they're able to be like, let's explain it away. He's been in a coma for a year.
He defies modern medicine.
Right. And that gives us room for his and Bade's relationship to almost continue because she's nursing him back to health 24/7, apparently.
Right.
And there is a little bit of amnesia, but, you know, trauma-based amnesia where it takes him a while to remember who shot him in the head and what happened. So that sustains us for a few episodes.
And I can buy into that. I would argue that actually a significant portion of Mehmet's season is trying to figure out exactly what happened to him that night and who was responsible.
Yeah, I mean, this whole show, Mehmet is pretty destabilized. So if they're just giving him something concrete to focus on, I'm all for it.
All he wants is a family.
The writing gods are like, you're gonna have to jump through every single hoop to maybe get that.
Here is more emotional trauma. Enjoy.
Also, right at the beginning, Benham is fully in Farah and Kerem Shah's life. The writers have made it so he and his mom and some various servants and henchmen have taken over this mansion in Turkey because he can't take Kerem Shah back to Iran because of his health issues.
Mm-hmm.
Again, that's a little bit of a, we're going to suspend some disbelief because in season one, after we find out he's alive, you know, he has a wife, he has two daughters, three characters who we never see.
And don't really get brought up.
No, again. His mom will kind of be like, remember, you have daughters. And he's like, nah, but Farah. And then the show's like, cool, we've touched on it. Moving on.
Right. I also thought that it's interesting how, like, Tahir goes to Iran and gets imprisoned there a little bit. There's some travel between Turkey and Iran that I feel like should be more of a journey than the show made it out to be. Did you feel that way?
Yeah, there was definitely that one or two episodes where they're like, by the way, Tahir's in Iran now for his, like, SWAT team mission. And you're like, I mean, right. I guess. Didn't need to do that.
Like, oh, okay, he just hopped on a plane. All right.
But I think that's another symptom of the writers being like, will we have to wrap this show up in two episodes?
Agreed, yes.
Or do we have 10 episodes and we need to fill some time?
Which is why I think it's a shame that they don't at least guarantee a certain amount of episodes per season to allow the show writers to fully plot out what they're going to do without being like, well, the ratings are really low, so we're going to do this just in case we need to wrap things up quickly.
Right. It's like this kind of, let's plant some seeds. Will they grow? We don't know. Let's also chop down some trees and hope something happens.
Right.
Another good thing about the year time jump is that Kerem Shah is just healed now.
Huzzah!
It takes a while for us to find out why, which, I mean, works for the plot, but It is interesting that something that took up the entirety of season one is kind of just like, all right, he's fixed now.
Correct, yep.
Again, miracles of modern medicine. I feel like the Autumn Farah writers should share their scientific findings with the greater global population. But, you know, that's just me. And then the other big main thing that we get right at the beginning of season two is just little moments of showing how the White Lamb Syndicate is restructuring and rebuilding Without Ali Gholip and Orhan really around.
Right, because they're both gone in season two for the most part.
For the most part, and that's due to caste. So I'm very curious, I mean, I'm never going to get the answer to this of, you know, did the...
You can write a letter.
I mean, of all the letters I would write to Disneyland, this is not top of the list. So I'm happy to live with the ambiguity. But I think this was, again, the writers being like, well, the cast isn't here, so we have to redo.
And for me, I mean, as always, I think the chemistry between Farah and Tahir is what keeps the show going for me. They are the heart, in my opinion, of the show. And the chemistry is still there. There's more intrigue this season between them because Farah, after the time jump, is essentially with Benham and by his side. I thought that the show kept their relationship and their chemistry intact while keeping them apart a little bit and having Farah explore the relationship, for lack of a better term, with Benham and Kerem Shah's father. So I also, as I touched upon earlier briefly, I loved the outfits a lot more in the season, but I know it's silly, but Farah looked really sad in season one. And I get it. You know, she's in this new country. She's trying to make a life for herself. She's living on scraps, basically. But her outfits are A+. Like, she's right out of a fashion magazine in season two. So I thought that was kind of fun. And I'm sure Demet had a big part in some of the fashion choices that she wore. Some of them, like, I'm like, girl, you're going to the mall. Like, why are you dressed like you're about to go to the Oscars? That's a dress. I'm lucky if I don't have sweatpants on any given day, so good for her. It was also really nice to see Karemshaw without the spaceman outfit, which he wore the entire season one. And I get it, he's healed, he doesn't need that oxygen protectiveness without germs and disease, but it was nice to see him be outside, have a little more freedom. I'm sure the actor really appreciated it as well. So that was really nice. I really liked how they brought in Farah's mother. And not only did Karemshaw get his grandmother, but it was really sweet to see the relationship that Tahir was starting to build with Farah's mother, because he obviously grew up an orphan. He didn't know his family. And I think there's a moment where she calls him Olam, son, and he gets teary-eyed a little bit. That touched upon the cockles of my cold, cold heart. And I really liked that moment.
Yeah, that was nice. Especially since so much of his life for him, love has had to be earned, and, you know, being the adopted son / henchman of some not good people.
Correct, yeah.
Isn't the most emotionally stable environment, so.
Correct, yeah. And I think that's what made it all the better. Overall, what the whole show in general, but what season two does well for me is the family bonds, because you've also got the brotherhood storyline between Mehmet and Tahir, which blossoms in season two.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they both realize that they're brothers. I loved that. I think that the actors who play Mehmet and Tahir have great chemistry with each other, and that was really nice to see. So not only is it Farah, who came from a much better family life growing up, bringing that love to Tahir, but also he's realizing the relationship with Mehmet is actually more of a brother relationship, because, surprise, that is his brother. So I really liked that.
That was such a great carryover from season one. That's something I loved, is that from the first episode, there was this connection between Mehmet and Tahir. And at first, it's very antagonistic.
Yeah.
Mehmet's on his vendetta, and he and Tahir have already had a bunch of run-ins. But I love that they had this relationship and how much it fluctuated. And I loved that there was no reveal in sight after season one, because it'll come in time. Like, there was going to be a time where it all came to a head, and it did.
Right. It was a really nice payoff.
One thing that the show also, I thought, did pretty well was that it balanced all of the drama and the pain. I wouldn't say balanced, because there's still a lot of drama and pain.
Naturally.
But it did give the characters some happy moments to breathe that weren't overshadowed by drama.
I agree. You know what comes to mind?
Mm.
That moment where they take a photo in the living room.
Yeah, they'll do the family photos when Farah's mom has arrived. There's that scene once Tahir and Mehmet find out their brothers. The brothers and Farah and Bade all have dinner together.
Oh, yeah, that was really good, too. Yes, yep.
And then we had to check off the dizzy moment where someone plays an instrument and sings. We got that out of the way.
See, this is what's nice. Unlike some other shows... Yarga, that emotionally drain you. This show had a nice balance of, like, yes, there's drama. Yes, there's conflict. Yes, the characters are going through some physical and emotional turmoil, but it's balanced a little bit with lightness and happy moments and just the characters enjoying time with each other. And that's nice.
And that's something else that's really nice about this show is I think there's always a strong thread of hope going through it.
Oh, that's good, yeah.
All the characters believe at some point that it's terrible now, but there's the potential for it to get better, and we want that for ourselves and each other.
Yeah.
I think that was really nice, instead of having a bunch of scenes where you think it's a happy moment, but actually everyone's lying to each other, or actually someone has a gun to their head and they don't know, or actually there's a bomb about to go off and they're blissfully unaware.
Right.
There's always time and place for that, but it was nice for them to be like, we're gonna go on a obnoxiously romantic date. And some of those are too much for me, where I'm like, I don't need this, like, grand gesture
nonsense.
No, they're
too much for most people. No, it's, yeah.
But it was nice. The final thing that I want to touch on that season two does well is the Ali Gallup plotline. Because as we found out after season one, the actor was exiting the show for whatever reason. Luckily, it wasn't a full exit because they were able to bring him back for the flashbacks at the beginning of season two.
Yeah, that was nice.
And we show that Ali Gallup does get murdered. Like, he's dead. And they have the plot line where Farah has been pretty brutally kidnapped by Ben-Om and is being held captive and is trying to get away, wants to get back to Tahir. There's all the drama about who shot Mehmet, so Tahir's going to prison because they have no witnesses and they have rats in all of the organizations that are framing him. And it comes to pass that Bade, Gonul, and Farah are all complicit in the murder of Ali Gholib, and there is security cam footage of that taking place that falls into Ben-Om's hands. And that's something we learn really soon at the beginning of season two, and it is a pervasive theme throughout the whole season, which I thought was really great. There are some shows that would do something like that, and then that would drop off, and a new plot would happen, and then they'd be like, oh, also, by the way, remember that guy that died a while ago? That actually, security footage is important. No, that is a key point, and we run with it all the way until the end of the season, and I quite enjoyed that.
It's also nice that it gives credence to Farah's actions and why she's staying with Ben-Om, because there is a time when we don't really know what her scheme is. We know that she loves Tahir and wants to be with him. Like, why is she with Ben-Om? And this ties that together nicely, too, and gives her a really good motive for her actions and why she's sticking with him quite as much as she does.
Yeah.
But for all that season two does well, I think more so than we had for season one, there were aspects of season two that I think we can agree they didn't do so well.
Yeah. I mean, we've already touched on this, but yeah, between season one and season two, there were some casting changes. Ali Gholib was gone. Orhan was gone for most of it. He came back for a couple of episodes at the end. And then Khan just never returns.
Never came back.
Yeah, they throw together this plot where he like moved to America for safety. I don't remember what he's doing. Is he in school? Is he in business? It doesn't matter. He and Gonul end up divorcing via email or something. Like, he's never back in the picture, which I don't hate. He was not a character that I felt was super vital anymore, but it did kind of overturn some storylines where like, oh, guess we're not going that way.
Right. I know. I mean, I know it did change a few things for Gonul, but I think it all worked out for the best, in my opinion. I was more bummed about the disconnect from the buildup of season one with the black lamb, white lamb. I wanted to learn more about Orhan and Ali Gholib and a little bit more of their backstory than we got. I know we got some, but I really wanted more into that. And so I felt like with the actors dropping out of the show, that storyline kind of got brushed under and the Ben-Om storyline became more forefront for the plot. And then the other characters that stuck around, such as Vera and Perihan, their purpose became less important and more like, why are you on my screen? I don't really know what your purpose is right now. I think but for the actors of Orhan and Ali Gholib leaving the show, they probably wouldn't have done such a 180, but it is what it is.
Yeah, and that was something I also wanted to talk about, was the Black Lamb, White Lamb organization. Because for season two, the criminal network, which in season one we'd only gotten glimpses of, and that was a great setup. But by season two, it becomes pretty convoluted as to what they're doing, who's involved. There's so many switches. We kind of knew Ilyas was bad in season one, but it's also like, there are moles in the police, who could they be? And then by the end of season two, it's like, they thought it was a mole, but I wanted to distract them, but I'm not a mole, I'm actually a good person. And it's just this kind of tennis match back and forth of confusion that wasn't as important as something that complicated should have been.
Yes, I agree. It also, because it wasn't as important, it was, for me at least, a little confusing when it came up, because I'm like, wait, now I don't know what to believe.
Yeah, they try to pull one over on you and be like, you thought this was true, but actually it's this. It's like, I mean, I didn't really think that was true, so you changing it, it's not a shock to me. I don't know what's going on. I didn't know what was going on before, and you've changed it, so I still don't know what's going on.
But it also isn't important either to really the continuation of the plot. So not only did you make it confusing, but it's something that I don't care enough about to really dig into, because I've moved on to more important plot points right now that are carrying the story.
Yeah.
And for me, another thing that I didn't think season two did well, even worse than season one did, like really they dropped the ball on this, was the continuity of Tahir's job. in season one, he owns a restaurant, and my gripe in season one was that it was a very convenient ownership. Like, he was there when the plot needed him to be there. But in season two, he's never there. I didn't even know if he continued to own that restaurant or club until it became pertinent in some of the later episodes, because he's too busy going to Iran. He's too busy infiltrating. Like, he gets a job kind of in Benham's organization on, like, the board. He's doing all these other things except his actual job that drove me insane.
I was thinking about that a lot today as I finished the show.
Shocker.
Does this man make any money? He's like a jack of all trades with no trade.
That's a great way of putting it.
He just talks about his restaurant, and then, yeah, he's in prison for a bit. He's a bad guy. I'm assuming the police aren't paying him to infiltrate Orhan. And then he kind of is. And it's like, how are you putting gas in your car for all of these car chases and little field trips you're taking yourself on?
Right?
What's the deal?
And I still don't understand how he managed to infiltrate Benham's board of bad guys. That, like, how...
What? That is another thing. Yeah, remember we had the joint company between the Akinjis and Benham, and there's this whole board of directors, and all the reporters are there, and it's like this big deal. And then we're at the company for what? 3 episodes max, and there's all these disputes of shares in the company, and then we don't talk about that anymore.
Again, it's the show giving too much time and credence to plot points that don't really move the story forward. I mean, I think that's one of the overarching things that I think season 2 did not do well.
Yeah.
But wrapping this up, I think that, in my opinion, really, is that I think that the finale wrapped things up a little too quickly. Obviously, goes back to our point that the showrunners did the best they could, given the ratings and how many episodes they had to work with. I felt like there was very little payoff to some of the storylines and how they wrapped it up. And I remember after it ended being like, wait, what happened to Benham? I wasn't even sure what had happened to him because it just moved so quickly. And the finale really tried to put a bow on things that I didn't feel had enough explanation and payoff. So that was one of my last gripes as to like what I didn't think season 2 did very well. The season 1 finale, I thought, was much more thought out, better planned, and executed.
Which is a little crazy to me, honestly, because having just watched the last 3 episodes...
Yeah, tell me if I'm crazy or not there.
Well, I agree that it wrapped up really quickly, but what I think is a little strange is they had the time and space in the last couple of episodes to wrap it up better, and yet all of the convoluted White Lamb stuff, they push that all the way through most of the finale. And I was like, honestly, I don't care about whatever shipment is happening and this kind of gang war with all these, like, the police and Benham and Orhan, and then Tahir's involved and Farah's involved, but they're not telling each other to keep each other safe. But that's a detriment. And we just did that for way too long. And then they're like, also, all the other things are solved. See, those were the things I would have cared that you spend more time on.
Correct. Agreed.
So I don't even think it was a lack of episodes. I feel like this was enough episodes for the story that they told.
Yeah.
I just don't think they allocated time in the right ways, if that makes sense.
Yeah. No, it's a good point.
But it wasn't all doom and gloom. There was definitely stuff that we liked about this season.
Of course, of course. I mean, contrary to the negative things we say, I overall love this show. And I think as a whole, Autumn Farah is going to go down as one of my favorite Dizzies that I've watched. I mean, will I watch it again? No, it's not something I'm going to like put reruns on. But I very much looked forward to watching it every week. And I think that's rare for me in the Dizzy world, especially for a drama. But I, you know, despite its predictability, I really enjoyed the storyline of Tahir overall trying to, quote unquote, save Farah from Benham. I kind of liked that there was some unpredictability of like, all right, is she with Benham because he saved Karemsha? Is she with him because she's afraid for her life because he's dangerous? Nope, turns out she's with him because he's got some blackmail over her head. I kind of liked putting those pieces together to figure out her motives, why she was there, and then watching Tahir try to save her in almost slightly comedic ways sometimes, where he'd stroll through the door, and I'm like, you can't just do that, my dude. private residence, but whatever. So that I really enjoyed. One storyline that we haven't really talked too much about that I think Maya is going to vehemently disagree with me on is that I really liked the Gonal-Bakir romance. I had predicted it in season 1 when she was with Khan and got married to Khan. I kind of saw the potential in Bakir to be more of a romantic hero than he had been in season one. So they didn't annoy me nearly as much as they did in season one. And I enjoyed them being together. They didn't do a lot of will they, won't they. They were just kind of like, no, we like each other. We make each other better. Let's do this.
Yeah, interestingly with them, I think I was way more intrigued by their possibility in season one than what season two ended up doing with them.
Shocker.
I feel like the writers saw the speculation. We're like, okay, cool, U-turn, we're gonna do this now. And it worked, but I just don't care. I don't know. I think part of it is it's a Turkish romantic trope where we knew each other as kids and she had her little candied apple.
Candy apple.
And it was this cute thing. And I don't know. Bekir was kind of this wild card the whole season where he's kind of a shitty person. No. He's kind of a...
But Gonal makes him better.
Kind of. He was just kind of like, I'll do anything for you, but also I'm gonna sell my soul to the bad guys to look bad, and then they'll do a little twist and be like, actually, he was on our side.
He was working for Tahir, though. Like, he was on Tahir's side.
Yes, but we didn't always know that. And
I know.
They didn't set him up to be likable. They're just like, he likes Gonal. And we're like, okay. I mean, I personally was like, I don't like Gonal, so him liking her is not... an absolute win, but whatever.
Let me make this argument to you, though, Maya. Gonal was so distracted by her budding romance with Bekir that she was significantly less annoying in the show, because if you remember season one Gonal, she was always like, oh, Farrah, where are you? Where are you going? Oh, why don't you tell me where you're going? Why don't you tell me these things? Why are you keeping secrets? We did not have that in season two, and I, for one, thank the Dizzy gods, because I wanted to reach my fist through the screen and slap her.
Yep, I will give you that. I will agree. Yeah, that was way toned down. I appreciated that.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Again, there were times where she's not doing anything interesting enough to have as many scenes as she has, but fine. It was funny re-listening to our season one episode with our predictions. And Caro, you did predict that by the end, Bekir was going to come out as a good guy.
Woohoo!
So props to you.
Thank you very much. I feel very vindicated in that. I think the writing was strongly on the wall, so I don't think I did anything all that amazing in such a prediction, but I think it worked out well. I mean, I certainly liked it. I liked the ending that they gave Bekir and Gonal, a little bit of their happy ending. That was a nice moment for me on the show.
Yeah. Contrary to popular belief, or maybe Carol's belief, I did have some things that I did quite enjoy about this season.
Good.
Again, Mehmet. I mean, I have in my notes Mehmet as a giant toddler, which I think is maybe a little unfair because the man has a lot of trauma.
A lot of trauma.
He's very emotionally stunted. He's been through it. So not that he has an excuse, but it's understandable that he is the way he is.
To be fair, though, you've been a Mehmet fan since almost day one of Adam Farah. Like, you were a supporter of him from then on.
Well, it's interesting because I thought so, too. And then I re-listened to our season one episode, and apparently I hated him for the first few episodes.
Interesting. I don't remember that.
And it's only slowly coming back to me. And I think I do remember because he was just plowing through the law, not listening to anyone.
Oh, right, right, right.
So it wasn't until we got some glimpse of, you know, his humanity outside his needing to, you know, solve the case of the initial murder. But yes, ever since then, Stan Mehmet. And so, yes, I will definitely take into account his traumatic upbringing. But the guy is however old. We'll say 40, but who knows?
Don't ask me, because I thought Bade was going to be more of a daughter figure to him in season one.
That's still so funny to me. But he has no emotional regulation. So that leads him to jump to some really strong conclusions. There was one scene, I can't remember what was happening, but he was just like really frustrated and like kicks the ground and like some gravel skitters. I'm like, did that help? Was that helpful for you?
Didn't he trash the police station at one point? Or maybe that was when he got...
I think he did, but that might have been a ruse.
When he got his badge taken away?
Oh, yeah. It was either then or just when he wanted to not alert any suspicion to whoever the dirty cop was. But yeah, he's just very volatile. And there were so many funny moments of it occurring. I mean, it also leads me to wonder, aside from being a Nepo baby when Orhan was a cop, how was he in the force for so long with his anger issues and all of that? That was a lot, but I enjoy Mehmet. I think the writing was so well done about the complexity of his character. And
the actor did a really good job of portraying that complexity as well.
Did. And especially, again, I just watched it today, was the sad moments of when Bade rejects his proposal.
I was thinking of you when I watched that scene, and I knew you weren't caught up yet, and I was like, oh, I can't wait to hear her commentary on this, because you've been such a Bade Mehmet supporter.
I am, and I kind of enjoyed that that moment was so in character with him that they didn't give it the Dizzy special and have him, like, with a teddy bear and balloons and just do this weird grand gesture that made no sense for his character.
Right.
I think him being in a corner, and obviously he's had no stability his whole life, and so he's like, everyone lies to me. You trust me. Gotta lock this down. I love you. And then Bade saying no because of the guilt she feels of she's not being completely honest right now. That was perfect scene.
Yes.
And then later, when he finds out what she was lying about the murder, and he comes around and says, some of the problem is me. I'm not someone that people feel comfortable telling things to because of how I'll react. I really love that for him. Just the complexity of him.
A little bit of self-awareness there.
We love it. It only took several decades, but that's a lesson to everyone. Everyone can grow and change.
You're never too old.
Yes.
No, that's agreed. That was nice.
And just overall, I really liked that it was a solid second season. They came up with a plot continuation that filled up all the episodes. Season one ended at a point where that plot wasn't completed, and so they finished off the story that they started instead of just adding a new arc to an old story. Because as I'm very vocal about, I don't want multiple seasons of things. I'm attached to the initial story idea. Let's keep that. Let's flesh it out. Let's follow it to its logical conclusion. And then stop. Please, my heart can't take my favorite shows just
dragging their characters through emotional mud.
Yeah, just let us have some peace. We know that there's the Dizzy machine out there. More shows will come along. Let's invest our resources and writers into that.
I agree. And I think you made some really great points, some of which I had forgotten about Mehmet, because I had kind of forgotten about the proposal and things like that with Mehmet and Bade, because it was overshadowed a little bit by some of the other plot lines. But, you know, you made some really good points, and I'm going to miss the character of Mehmet. I kind of almost wish that he had had a little bit more of a growth arc, just in terms of regulating his emotions, given that he ended the series with more of a family structure than he started off with.
Yeah.
But overall, I'm happy for him. I'm pleased with the way he got that ending, so.
Yeah.
Was there anything you didn't like, Maya, about season two?
Well, funny you should ask.
Do tell. Let it all out.
So in this vein, for me, Mehmet and Bade were the most interesting romantic coupling of this series. I mean, obviously, Farah and Tahir are number one, and the show is about their love story.
Right.
But that wasn't a love story that I was really stressed about, you know?
I know what you mean.
They were gonna fight for their love.
It was a guarantee.
Pretty much a guarantee. I mean, after the beginning, when Tahir's like, I'm gonna kill you because you saw stuff. And I'm like, wait, once they're in love, in like, and Kerem Shah is important to Tahir, they were going to be star-crossed lovers. That wasn't a relationship I was that interested in, because I was like, oh, okay, this is what's going to happen. I don't have to root for it. I don't have to think about it. It's there.
That's a great point, yeah.
Mehmet and Bade was such an amazing slow burn at the beginning. It starts out being framed as a, they come from different worlds, but as you get into it, they really don't. They both exist in these different kinds of gray. Her in the gray area of this crime family. She's a lawyer. She is their lawyer, but she's not a doormat to them. She has her own thoughts and her own mind.
I really thought she was almost undercover for Ali Gallup when she was going after Mehmet. And I was like, oh my God. I remember when the realization hit, I'm like, she really likes him. That's interesting.
Yeah. He's all high and mighty at the beginning. You know, I'm a police officer. My goals and the law is on my side with my mission.
His conviction.
Yes. And he is the light and the Akanjis are the dark. And then as you get in, it's like, no, they both exist in their own gray areas. And then they come together and they find what each of them didn't know they were looking for in each other. And when I was listening back to our original episode, I was reminded of, they're not really together. together until pretty much the end. And it's more of a, they're dancing in the backyard at Ali Gollop's, and he tells her, there's love here.
Yes.
And that's this little moment that they have that solidifies their relationship. And they have this amazing, beautiful moment in season one when Bade talks about not being able to have children. And just both of them not having family, but coming at it from different ways. Love them so much. And then we get to season two.
Mm.
And for the most part, Bade's completely sidelined.
Is she even a lawyer in season two? Do they even mention that?
They do, but barely. Because at the beginning, I was thinking, great, she's been by Mehmet's side for a year, almost 24/7, nursing him back to health. Doing these things where I think, because she's such a complex character, I didn't feel like that made her super domesticated or anything. But then they don't do anything with her for the most part.
They don't.
She's just at home. She's in her athleisure. She's like, Mehmet, don't go, once he's out of his coma, but not quite walking and just grumpy and angry and slamming around and insecure.
She's more of a doormat for Mehmet in season two, kind of chasing after him. And then when the blackmail tape comes out, tries to keep her distance from him. But her storyline focuses more around Mehmet than herself being an independent character.
Yeah, and then sometimes the show uses her to deliver messages between Mehmet's camp and Vera and Perihan at some point.
Yeah.
To Tahir and Farah. She's kind of a go-between. And then, I don't know, maybe three times during the whole season, they have her do something law-related but off-screen.
Yes.
Like, at the end, she's like, oh, by the way, I stopped your divorce. Cool. I mean, that wasn't a thing I was thinking about, but great. I don't know. I heard this in an interview with Amy Adams during the press for the movie Arrival, which is one of my favorite movies. And she talks about how so often we get female characters that we're told that they're smart, but we don't see them be smart on the screen. And that's why she liked that character in Arrival, is we get to see her at work doing her thing.
Oh, that's interesting.
And yeah. So I think about that a lot now when we look at female characters in media and they're like, wow, look at how strong she is or how smart she is. And then it's just someone saying that on screen, not us getting to see her do it. And it made me think about that with Bade.
Yeah, she's smart on the call sheet, but not smart. Like, we don't actually get to see it in action.
Yeah.
In season two, anyway. Season one, we did.
Season one was amazing. It was so good. I was like, yes, sign me up. This is my ship. This is what I'm here for.
Yeah.
Aside from the main plot and the characters.
Yeah, I remember saying in our first episode on this that, like, I want to be Bade when I grow up, because she was so badass and independent and had her own mind. And a lot of that just kind of went away, where, again, I see her kind of as just Mehmet's doormat for a lot of season two, which is sad because she's more than just Mehmet.
Yeah. The other thing I didn't love, I mean, it wasn't as anger-inducing as Mehmet and Bade, but I didn't feel like Farah and Tahir had a lot of screen time where both of them were on the same page. They had a lot of screen time, but I feel like a majority of the season, they were keeping secrets from each other or not telling each other something. And Tahir's really angry at her for a lot of the time, because why is she with Benham? Why won't she leave?
It's almost like they had to put their sweet moments as flashbacks, because none of it organically could happen in season two.
They added, remember Kerem Shah's birthday party? And we're like, yeah. No.
Nope, that didn't happen in season one.
Right, and by the end, they balanced it out a bit, and they're very in love again, but there was a big lack of communication between them for what was ostensibly plot reasons, but honestly, half of the things, I was like, if you had a normal reaction, then we could all know the same information and have fewer problems.
Agreed.
One other thing was, again, I think in hindsight, I think this was more of an issue when I was watching the beginning of the season, but there was a lot of back and forth of Kerem Shah's relationship with his father, Benham.
Oh, yes.
I think it was well done, and I understand, you know, child psychology. Of course he wants to love his father. Of course he's looking for that missing piece of himself. Of course he wants to continue to love this man who is showering him with gifts and telling him he's amazing and wanting him to be a strong man, and who Kerem Shah thinks healed him and all this stuff. But the emotional turmoil that it puts the audience in, and Farah and Tahir, of him being like, oh, my father's the best. How dare you say anything bad about him? Oh, he's not a good person. person. He's mean to my mom, but also my dad. And it was just a lot.
I know, because he always calls Tahir Tahir Abi. Mm-hmm. And when Tahir had to hear him call Benham his father, Baba, I was like, oh, that made me sad.
It was a lot. And so I don't necessarily dislike that it existed, because I think that was a very realistic element to add. I just think it took up a lot of time.
Yeah.
If we're going to aim for a happy family, can we have some happy family moments on screen, please?
I agree. That I share your frustration there. For me, one of the more frustrating parts was around Tahir and Mehmet. And I know I had just said that it was one of the things I liked about season two, and it is. But I kind of thought once they realized they were brothers, they were going to have this unbreakable bond and they were going to be each other's ride or die. And that's not how season two played out. In fact, there's a few episodes where Mehmet goes back to thinking Tahir's against him, trying to hunt him down. And I was like, wait. You were just hugging him a few episodes ago, calling him Abi. That to me just didn't feel organic. It didn't feel right. It just felt like, oh, let's give them some more conflict and create some tension between the two of them. So I did not enjoy that at all.
That's exactly it, because that was something else for me, was all of the miscommunication. And I know it's not an uncommon dislike of media to dislike the miscommunication trope, if you will. But there's so many fights and just small issues due to miscommunication, all because these two traumatized guys can't be adults and like pause for a moment and listen. Like, again, Farah and Tahir, they'll have these moments where they'll keep secrets from each other, and in their minds they're like, oh, I'm saving them. It's like, yeah, but the thing is, one of you doesn't know what's going on, so they're making it worse and then getting mad at each other. So there was all of that. And then, Mehmet and Tahir, they're just at each other's throats half the time, but also grudgingly in love with each other because they're long-lost brothers. And I'm just sitting there thinking, these are two men who have been in positions of power. And, like, no one's questioned how fit they are.
Yeah, no competency tests have been done.
No.
I agree. It's silly lack of communication that resulted in a lot of frustration. More so, I think, than season one.
Yeah, because there's a lot of stuff going on in the story. Yes. It's not like if they communicated, the story's gone. There's still so much against all the protagonists that it's like, let's have some moments of joining together instead of having these random, I have all my henchmen that I've acquired and we're gonna go save the day. It's like, again, if you just talk to your brother and friend and wife, we could have made this leap a little faster.
And in terms of Tahir and Mehmet, I just didn't feel like it advanced the plot that much. Like, if I'm thinking back on it, I don't even remember why Mehmet started distrusting Tahir after they realized they were brothers. Like, I wanted to see them work together and be partners because they finally realized they had blood family that they didn't think they had in season one. And all of a sudden, Mehmet's chasing Tahir, who's like hiding on the roof of a shed to like avoid being seen by Mehmet and the police. Like, what? No, that wasn't something I enjoyed.
Yeah. And that's something we talked about before, is the rushed ending. Yeah. With all of this convoluted drama, it then draws to a close with, 25 minutes of them being like, also, here's all the ending beats.
Right.
And it leaves me with so many questions. Like, does Farah ever become a doctor? Because they seem to wrap that up, but then it's actually Orhan's henchman partner, some guy who's like, oh, you're gonna work for me and be my in-house doctor because I say so.
In between Tahir showing up mostly naked with flowers at her presumable place of work. Oh, that was very awkward.
So hard. Must we? Must we?
I love a good romantic gesture. That's not it, though. That's a no.
There's a line. But yeah, like, this is something we've talked about since season one, where she was undocumented in Turkey. She's a cleaner. Remember those days?
Oh, yeah.
Forever ago when she was a cleaner?
Vaguely.
But she went to school as a doctor. All she wanted to be was a doctor. And then it's like the end. Can we get any glimpse of, will her career goals be realized? Nope. Never know.
We'll never know.
The other thing, again, my potentially unpopular opinion with the masses. Why? When we do this cute found family, single parent romance trope, we've been on a journey, and every writer's like, you know what, this story is not complete. I don't care all of the work we've done emotionally as characters, everything we've been through. No, the leads have to have a baby. They have to get pregnant. I was hoping that for once we wouldn't do that. It wasn't needed. Tahir loves Kerem Shah like his own, but I'm not going to be in the picture anymore. Amazing. And then it's kind of thrown out. Tahir, I'm pregnant. Don't bleed out. And then we don't revisit that even after.
That's true, because it happened literally in the last 5 minutes of the show.
Because again, we have to have this dramatic, Tahir takes a bullet and he fake dies, we find out. I was like, we have 15 minutes to go. Any emotional arc we could have created with this is lost because we're just charging through it.
Yep, correct.
Again, it ends where we have to spend 2 minutes of our last 5 minutes at Tahir's fake funeral. And instead, we don't know. I mean, we know that Bade gave Mehmet this opening of, when you forgive me, when you're ready, please come back. I don't want to lose you. But in the end, we don't see any sense of if and when that's going to happen.
Right.
Bade just kind of hugs Farah goodbye. I don't know where Mehmet is. Okay, Gonal and Bekir, I mean, I guess we got hints a few episodes ago that, you know, Bekir was gonna earn Mehmet's approval.
Mm-hmm.
Again, no bow on that. It was just kind of like, probably. And then finally, does just no one know that Tahir is alive? Like, who is in on this he's fake dead? And then also, Farah's telling Tahir's two henchmen guys, oh, there's nothing for us in Istanbul. They get in the car for like 10 minutes. Farah has all these flashbacks about the beginning of their relationship, and they pull up at a new house, and Tahir is there?
That's how long it takes them to get to Iran in Autumn Fireland. Yeah,
or maybe they went to France like they were going to do. What was the plan there?
It was so rushed for something that didn't have to be rushed.
We could have spent a whole episode on that. We had the time.
Yeah. Agreed. I agree.
It wasn't a bad ending. Like, we got the kiss. They're going to be together. I liked in the finale that they pulled a lot of flashbacks from episode 1 and season 1.
They've come a long way. It was nice to remember that.
It was really nostalgic. And then they're like, we're going to get to be ordinary people now, which is what we want from them from the very beginning. We want them to have a non-traumatic life.
Yep.
But was this the way to just squeeze it into this tiny amount of time and be like, ta-da? I don't know.
I know. My hope for the finale was that they were all going to be a new family unit without drama. Like, it was basically going to be Tahir and Farah with Mehmet and Bade, with Gonal and Bekir. Like, everyone kind of in their own happy ending, but together. Because, in my opinion, one of the themes of the show is family. And, like, some family is blood and some family you make yourself. And this was kind of a mixture of both. Where, you know, Mehmet and Tahir are blood, but they've created this new family unit that was gonna be together going forward. And that's not what happened.
No. But the thing is it could have. It's canon compliant that all of that probably happened, but they didn't take that final step.
Yeah.
Maybe it could have been the housewarming at Tahir and Farah's new house. We could see that Mehmet and Bade are officially engaged. Mehmet's making an effort to talk to Bekir. We could have had no dialogue. Kerem Shah could have been running around.
Yep. Basically, like, the ending to the holiday. That's what I wanted for Autumn Farah.
I was thinking Sia Bayaz Ashk, but yes. It could have taken 30 seconds of airtime, honestly.
Yeah.
And again, it wasn't a bad ending. It was just such a wasted opportunity for this journey we've been on for 27 episodes.
The end.
I guess.
So overall, I'll miss the show. I enjoyed the cast. You know, their behind the scenes Instagram posts I thought were really cute and kind of fun. Nothing in Disneyland is really speaking to me as much as Autumn Farah did to watch. I'm obviously looking forward to summer rom-com season. Hopefully something's there that Maya and I can obsess over, because I really, really want that. I love rom-com season. But I'll miss Autumn Farah. It was a show I looked forward to every week, and it'll go down as one of my favorite shows in Dizzy, for sure.
And, you know, for all of my gripes and dislikes, it was a really solid series. And I think it had the perfect amount of episodes for the story they wanted to tell. It was one of the few shows that I was really excited to have multiple seasons. All around, it's up there for me. And it was a good time.
It was.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Dizzy Breakdown. I'm Maya.
And I'm Caro, and we're two American friends on opposite coasts who love to break down
and break down over
Turkish TV shows.